It is 3 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
From Washington, this is VOA News. Egypt criticized for mass death sentences against members of Muslim Brotherhood. Car bombing in northern Nigeria takes at least 10 lives. I'm Victor Beatty reporting from Washington. The leader of Egypt's Muslim Brotherhood and nearly 700 members of the group went on trial Tuesday on charges including murder and inciting violence. Lawyers said just a few hours the trial of Mohamed Badia and others was adjourned until April 28, when judgment and sentencing is expected. Defense lawyers boycotted Tuesday's session of the trial to protest the verdicts issued Monday by the same court in the city of Minya. That court sentenced more than 500 Brotherhood members to death on charges of murdering a police officer, attacking a police station, and other acts of violence. The first trial took place just 2 days, drawing international criticism over whether the proceedings were fair. In Washington Tuesday, for his second day, a U.S. spokesperson, Marie Harf, denounced the mass verdict as unconscionable. In Geneva, a U.N. spokesperson, UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, expressed equal alarm at the mass sentencing. The charges in the two trials are related to clashes in Minya last August. That violence erupted after security forces in Cairo broke up two Brotherhood protest camps, leaving hundreds of people dead. They were protesting the army's ouster of President Mohamed Morsi, a Brotherhood member who has been in custody since he was removed from office in July and is facing several trials himself. In northern Nigeria Tuesday, suspected Islamist militants rammed an explosives-laden vehicle into a police van in Maiduguri, killing at least 8 people, including 5 policemen. 2 suicide bombers were also killed in the blast. The attack came one day after the head of the shadowy Boko Haram group threatened to unleash all-out war on Maiduguri, where the militant group was formed. It's blamed for thousands of deaths and a 4-year insurgency to turn northern Nigeria into an Islamist state. UN Human Rights Chief Navi Pillay has warned that rape in the Democratic Republic of Congo remains rampant. Speaking to the UN Human Rights Council on Tuesday, Ms. Pillay said sexual violence remains a weapon of war to intimidate local communities and to punish civilians for real or suspected collaboration with rival forces. She says more than 26,000 incidents of gender-based violence were recorded in 2011 and 2012, with more than 15,000 cases added last year in 7 DRC provinces. Meanwhile, South African President Jacob Zuma announced on Tuesday he has prolonged the mandate of over 1,300 South African soldiers as part of the UN peacekeeping force in eastern DRC. They are part of the so-called UN Intervention Brigade, which has a mandate to directly battle armed movements in the region. Zimbabwe's opposition leader Morgan Tsvangirai on Tuesday said there is a renewed unity within his party after a meeting in Harare among the leadership of the Movement for Democratic Change. There has reportedly been internal tension and calls for his resignation since Mr. Tsvangirai was defeated in last July's election by incumbent President Robert Mugabe. Once again, our lead story, the leader of Egypt's Muslim Brotherhood and nearly 700 members of his group went on trial Tuesday on charges including murder and inciting violence. A lawyer said after just a few hours that the trial of Mohamed Badia and others was adjourned until April 28, when judgment and sentencing is expected. Defense lawyers boycotted Tuesday's session of the trial to protest the verdicts issued on Monday by the same court in the city of Minya. That court sentenced more than 500 Brotherhood members to death on charges of murdering a police officer, attacking a police station, and other acts of violence. The first trial took just 2 days, drawing international criticism over whether the proceedings were fair, including criticism from Washington and just Tuesday from the UN Human Rights Council. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News. You can find more by accessing our internet website, that address, voanews.com.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voices of America. I'm James Barte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, March 26th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The United Nations says it is facing funding shortages in its humanitarian efforts in the Sudan.
In that gap between what we receive and what we need, our people dying. It's as graphic and as tragic as that.
John Geng is the head of operations for the UN's humanitarian division. Meanwhile, the United States has announced an additional $83 million in humanitarian assistance for displaced South Sudanese. South Sudan seeks to strengthen diplomatic ties with Egypt, but critics say it is looking for military assistance against rebels. And Zimbabwe's MDC opposition takes steps to reunite a divided party.
I'm proud to announce today that we have discussed our issues and there is now unprecedented harmony and unity of purpose in the MDC cockpit.
That's former Zimbabwe Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai. There are efforts to ease tensions between Muslims and Christians in the Central African Republic mining town. More mass trials have opened in Egypt, and Doctors Without Borders joined the fight against Ebola in Guinea-Conakry. Those stories plus Mark Oman's post and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The United Nations says it is facing massive funding shortfalls as it tries to feed millions of people in need in Sudan and South Sudan. As VOA's Margaret Bashir reports, the UN says people may die without urgently needed funds.
The head of operations for the UN's humanitarian division, John Geng, said Tuesday that the agency has requested nearly $2.3 billion in funding for humanitarian efforts this year in Sudan, its Darfur region, and South Sudan. More than 2 million people are displaced in Darfur, and over 6 million need humanitarian assistance across Sudan. In South Sudan, recent violence has internally displaced some 700,000 people and forced nearly a quarter of a million others to flee to neighboring countries as refugees. The UN says almost 5 million people in South Sudan are in urgent need of basic humanitarian assistance. Geng told reporters that the appeals are dangerously underfunded.
In that gap between what we receive and what we need, our people dying. It's as graphic and as tragic as that.
Of the $995 million request for Sudan, only 3%, or $34 million, has been received. On South Sudan, only a quarter of the nearly $1.3 billion requested has been funded. Geng recently traveled to the region with UNICEF's Deputy Director of Emergency Operations, Yasmin Haque, and the emergency directors of several other UN agencies and NGO partners. South Sudan has less than 1,000 kilometers of paved roads. Yasmin Haque stressed that during the rainy season, which will begin in June, dirt roads will become impassable, making up to three-quarters of the country inaccessible. Normally, aid agencies position supplies during the dry season so they can distribute them during the wet months. But Haque said that has not been possible this year due to the fighting, access issues, and funding constraints.
This means that not enough food has been prepositioned throughout the country. We don't have the type of water and sanitation supplies, nutritional supplements that are so needed to treat the cases of malnutrition, seeds and tools, agricultural implements, whatever is needed to keep a group of people who are in a dire need from slipping further into grave humanitarian consequences.
In addition to insufficient funding, Geng said in South Sudan, humanitarian workers face delays at checkpoints, slowing down the delivery of aid to those in need. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
The United States has announced an additional $83 million in humanitarian assistance to hundreds of thousands of people displaced from their homes by the fighting that broke out in mid-December. As Charlton Doki reports from Juba, the announcement was made on Tuesday by U.S. officials visiting South Sudan.
USAID's Assistant Administrator for the Bureau of Democracy, Conflict and Humanitarian Assistance, Nancy Lindborg, says they will use the money to improve poor living conditions, which left untreated could cause life-threatening diseases to spread through IDP camps. She says the international community actually faces two looming crises in South Sudan.
Some 70,000 people who are huddled in the UNMISS compounds seeking safety, many of whom are in very, very overcrowded conditions, and it will be critical to address the needs of these people, especially since many of these compounds are literally in swamp areas. And as the rains come, these compounds will be unhealthy and unable to accommodate these people.
Part of the USAID money will be used to feed hundreds of thousands of hungry refugees and IDPs.
There's a looming crisis of food insecurity with over 1 million people who are currently in desperate need of food, where you have the effects of the conflict, the floods last year, and those who are hosting displaced persons, so that we are seeing rapid rises in malnutrition, particularly in children under 5.
Lindborg is urging NGOs to reach the needy as soon as possible, or she fears lives will be lost. And she's calling on both sides of the conflict to allow humanitarian access to those in need of assistance. The U.S. government has provided more than $400 million to South Sudan in humanitarian assistance over the last year. For VOA News, I am Charlton Doki in Juba.
South Sudan's foreign minister says his government has received assurances from its international partners and neighboring African countries that they will not accept any undemocratic change in government. Barnum Admiral Benjamin tells reporter Peter Clotty that South Sudan is a friend to all the countries in the region and is not interested in fomenting conflict between neighboring countries.
We started making visits of thanks and appreciation, and also explaining the circumstances that brought the crisis. I visited Egypt. I was a guest of honor to deliver and explain the Arab Foreign Ministers League of Arab State meeting, where the Foreign Minister of South Sudan was asked to come and explain the crisis. So I can tell you, South Sudan is properly understood now in the light of the issues that happened with regards to how quickly South Sudan went to the negotiating table through the IGAD mediation, the signing of the cessation of hostilities. Now we are at the level of verification and monitoring mechanism, as well as the Joint Technical Committee to be formed.
Recently, the Egyptian Minister for Defense was in South Sudan. Is it part of a military relationship with Egypt?
These are issues of bilateral relations, to strengthen relations between Egypt and South Sudan. Don't forget, when Sudan was one, it was known as Anglo-Egyptian Sudan. So South Sudan has had a very long historical connection with Egypt. Most of our students, it is one country in which we have one of the highest numbers of students studying in their universities on Egyptian government scholarships. So our Minister of Defense is on a bilateral visit to Cairo. And he was warmly received indeed. I think the Minister of Defense had a letter from the President to the President of the Arab Republic of Egypt. So these are normal diplomatic relations indeed.
We also heard reports that it appeared South Sudan has invited Egypt to set up an army base in South Sudan following the visit of South Sudan Defense Minister there. Is it true?
No, I think that it is not true, but what happened is that Egypt had applied in New York to the United Nations if they could also contribute to peacekeeping forces in the Republic of South Sudan, like the other countries who have contributed troops to UNMISS. And I think that was the request that the Egyptian government presented to the United Nations peacekeeping desk in New York. But don't forget, even before the independence of South Sudan, Egypt had some troops in southern Kordofan as a part of the peacekeeping forces that were inside Sudan before independence of South Sudan.
Barnaba Morale Benjamin is South Sudan's foreign minister. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital of Juba. It is Wednesday morning, March 26, and you are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 14 and a half minutes past the hour. Peacekeepers and aid groups are trying to ease tensions between Christians and Muslims in a diamond mining area of the Central African Republic. The town of Boda is one of the last in the western part of the country still inhabited by a large number of Muslims. The government has told militia men there to stop threatening the Muslim community, but the fighters said the Muslims must leave. Nick Long reports for VOA.
In the past 3 months, more than 100,000 Muslims have fled the west of the Central African Republic, but tens of thousands more are trapped in virtual ghettos and threatened by the anti-Balaka, the largely Christian militia groups that prompted the Muslims to flee. The largest of these ghettos outside the capital of Bangui is in the town of Boda, a diamond mining centre where there are about 12,000 to 14,000 Muslims. About 2 weeks ago, the CAR government sent a delegation to Boda, led by Joachim Kokate, who is a coordinator of the anti-Balaka and also a government advisor. Kokate came back reporting the anti-Balaka had agreed not to attack Muslims in Boda. VOA decided to investigate and arrived in Boda on March the 19th. The road into the town is lined with burnt-out and roofless buildings. Our driver and guide, a Christian, appeared nervous as he entered the Muslim zone. Here he is asking a Christian at the roadside whether the Muslims further up the road are well-armed. We drive on and arrive at the Muslim checkpoint. Hello, how are you, says the guide. We thought you were going to kill us, but fortunately you haven't. We do not kill or harm anyone, replies a young Muslim. But that does not mean the communities are reconciled. Despite the presence of 80 French peacekeepers and their helicopters circling above, all the Muslims in Boda that VOA speaks to say they want to leave. Several people say the French have improved security, but there are still threats that grenades were thrown into their area a few days ago and several Muslims' bodies were fished out of the river at the weekend. Diamond dealer Mahmad Adoum, who says he was born here and has never left the country, sums up the general mood.
C'est sûr que tout le monde va quitter parce qu'il y a insécurité totale.
He says everyone wants to leave because there is insecurity. The Christians want them out, and it is impossible for Muslims to move more than 200 metres outside their quarter. He says 95% of CAR diamond buyers are Muslims. A Christian source put the number at 50%. The Christians will lose out if the Muslims leave, says Adoum.
C'est grave pour le pays.
It is serious for the country, he says, because the diamond exporters in Bangui trust the Muslims to repay loans, and they may not trust the people who want to replace them. Nick Long for VOA News, Bangui.
A leader of Egypt's Muslim Brotherhood went on trial on Tuesday, a day after the mass death sentences for more than 500 Brotherhood supporters shocked legal and rights groups around the world. VOA's Elizabeth Arad has more from Cairo.
In Egypt, another day, another trial. On Tuesday, Mohamed Badia, the Muslim Brotherhood spiritual guide here during his arrest last year, is one of nearly 700 Brotherhood supporters charged with murder and sabotage. The trial, at which many defendants, including Badia, did not appear, is in the same mini-region court that Monday sentenced more than 500 others to death. That verdict for the death of one policeman and other violence rendered on the second day of the trial unleashed condemnation locally, internationally, even from anti-Brotherhood members of Egypt's judiciary.
We believe the trial's fairness, which is a right enshrined in the criminal code, was absent in the case, and therefore we take this stand, not in favor of any party. We are all aware and in agreement about the crimes committed by the Muslim Brotherhood. However, we must defend the rule of law in Egypt and ensure justice for all.
In Cairo, where support remains strong for the crackdown against supporters of ousted president and Brotherhood figure Mohamed Morsi, many were pleased with the decision.
This is good because it is the first time we see our judges act so quickly, because this was the second session.
But such swift action against Morsi supporters, compared to the dragged-out cases of pre-revolutionary officials, left others angry.
So why hasn't Mubarak been given the death penalty? Why hasn't al-Adli been given the death penalty?
With the mass trials and harsh sentences handed down to Morsi supporters being called the revenge of Egypt's military-backed leaders, worries of a greater backlash grow. Elizabeth Arad, VOA News, Cairo.
In Zimbabwe, the leader of the Movement for Democratic Change, MDC, Morgan Tsvangirai, says he has closed ranks with his chief lieutenants, among them Secretary General Tendai Biti, following calls for Tsvangirai's immediate resignation to pave the way for the renewal of the party ahead of the next elections expected in 2018. Thomas Churipasi has details from Harare.
Tsvangirai told a news conference at his party's Harvest House headquarters that he has resolved his differences with senior officials of his party who were calling for his ouster following a five-hour-long meeting of his party's National Executive Committee held in the capital Monday. Some senior MDCT officials, among them Party Treasurer General Roy Bennett, have been calling for leadership renewal in the Labour-backed party. Tsvangirai said the meeting agreed that the opposition party has to focus on the broader picture that is resolving socio-economic problems affecting ordinary Zimbabweans instead of wasting time on internal squabbles.
I'm proud to announce today that we have discussed our issues and there is now unprecedented harmony and unity of purpose in the MDC cockpit. We all agree that we all eat to the people of this country and the party at large to discuss and resolve matters so that we will be more effective in providing hope and a credible alternative to ZANU-PF.
The former Prime Minister said no one in his party has a right to pass a vote of no confidence in party officials elected at Congress. This follows a vote of no confidence in the party's Harare provincial leadership led by Paul Madzore that had been replaced by an executive led by Highfield legislator Eric Murai.
The Harare senior leaders have not been suspended. The Mutare, there are two people who have been suspended for indiscretions that they have committed, and a due disciplinary process will be engaged in. As for our Deputy Treasurer General, a due process is being followed.
Tsvangirai said he does not expect his party's Secretary General and former Finance Minister Tendai Biti to behave in a manner that undermines the party. This was in reference to his actions when Mangoma was suspended by the National Council last month for allegedly fomenting divisions in the party. Biti and Elias Mudzuri, who was also calling for leadership change, were present at Tsvangirai's press briefing. Tsvangirai said the unity showed by the leadership should now cascade to the party structures. He urged supporters to refrain from engaging in acts of violence. Reporting from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
The medical aid group Doctors Without Borders is helping to contain the Ebola outbreak in Guinea. The group is working with the Ministry of Health there to set up facilities to isolate patients in the southern part of the country. The World Health Organization says there are 86 suspected cases and 59 deaths. VOA's Jody Kapua reports.
Dr. Bart Janssens is Director of Operations in Brussels for Doctors Without Borders, also known as MSF.
Ebola is a disease of the family of the viral hemorrhagic fevers caused by Ebola virus. It's a rather rare disease, only occurs in a small number of countries in Africa, tropical Africa. When it reaches humans, it's extremely contagious and also a very deadly disease.
It spread from person to person.
You can only attract the disease by having direct physical contact with body fluids of patients. So it does not spread as a flu, for example, where the transmission is airborne through small droplets of saliva.
The symptoms begin with a sudden high fever, followed by severe muscle pain, vomiting, and diarrhea. The patient then suffers from severe internal or external bleeding, which then leads to shock. This can all happen in just 2 to 3 weeks. The World Health Organization says the Ebola patients have come from four districts, Gekedu, Macenta, and Nzedekore, and Kisidugu. Dr. Janssen says the source of Guinea's outbreak has not yet been pinpointed, and it may never be.
In general, we know that Ebola virus normally lives among small wild animals. They are small monkeys or bats, so that's often the source of the infection towards humans.
He says a person can become infected after being bitten by an animal carrying the virus or by using the animal for bushmeat. Ebola's mortality rate can be very high, but Janssen says good medical care can save lives. Healthcare workers must wear protective gear and follow strict procedures to prevent being infected themselves. MSF mobile teams are also looking for signs of the disease in Guinea's neighboring countries of Sierra Leone and Liberia. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
It's coming up at 25 minutes past the hour time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. A very good Wednesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa sports news, we begin with football. The United Against Malaria campaign during the 2013 Orange Africa Cup of Nations has received the Global Campaign of the Year Award at the annual Public Relations Week Award function in New York City in the United States of America. The campaign is credited with seamlessly integrating their anti-malaria message into scheduled live match broadcasts to over a billion people during Africa's flagship football event. In cycling, Frenchman Thomas Lebas won the second stage of the Tour of Constantine, some 320 kilometers east of the Algerian capital Algiers on Tuesday. Earlier on Monday, Algerian Azedine Lagab prevailed in the opening stage of the event. Today, Wednesday, cyclists compete over 100 kilometers in the third stage of the race. Meanwhile, the Association of National Olympic Committees of Africa, ANOCA, announced in Abidjan, Ivory Coast on Tuesday that Algeria will host the 2018 African Youth Olympic Games. The second edition of the Games are being staged in Gaborone, Botswana next month. In volleyball, Tunisian defending champions CS Sfaxien play Libya's El Ahly Benghazi in the quarterfinals at the Africa Men's Club Volleyball Championships in Sousse, Tunisia today, Wednesday. Other Tunisian clubs, Etoile du Sahel and Esperance, play Libya's El Ahly Tripoli and Algeria's Etoile Setif respectively, while Egypt's El Ahly encounter Algeria's Bordjibou Aridi. In classification ties, Kenya Prisons play Morocco's Itihad Tanga, Mozambique's Odriodad Tributaria play Ethiopia's Mugea Cement, Libya's Itihad Misrata engage Cameroon's Port Douala, the Democratic Republic of Congo's Espoir play Kenya General Service Unit, while in an all-Cameroonian affair, FAP Yaounde play Bafia Evolution. Finally, the week-long Africa Gymnastic Championships enter its second day in the South African capital, Tshwane, today, Wednesday. Over 60 contestants from 10 countries are vying for honors in the men's and women's senior and junior divisions. The event is also a qualifier for the World Youth Olympics in Nanjing, China, in August. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Here's our listener mail for this Wednesday morning, March 26th.
Good morning. This is William Poplo from Monrovia, Liberia. I'd like to commend the Ministry of Health and Social Welfare for the level of information they have provided for the Liberian people concerning this deadly disease, the Ebola virus. And I think it is about time that the Liberian government sees this emergency of the Ebola virus as a national emergency and provide funding to educate the Liberian population and also strengthen our border between Liberia and Guinea. Thank you. Have a great day.
We thank you, listener, for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. The leader of Egypt's Muslim Brotherhood and nearly 700 members of the group went on trial on Tuesday on charges including murder and inciting violence. A lawyer said after just a few hours, the trial of Mohamed Badieh and the others was adjourned until April 28. That's it for this Wednesday, March 26th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Mark Owoman, along with our engineer John Ellison, I'm James Butte in Washington saying, have a lovely day, Africa.
Are you wandering around lost in a musical desert? Well, follow your ears to the fantastic, the one and only African music mix on the Voice of America. VOA. Bathe yourself in this musical oasis. From the north to the south and from the east to the west, the African music mix plays only the best. Tune in from 0 to 300 hours UTC and from 11 to 1300 hours UTC every single day on the Voice of America. Our